Welcome to our special Los Angeles Greens event for Women's History Month, Petra Kelly's Legacy. And so I want to introduce Clara Greensfelder.
However, I must say that Petra had friends everywhere, and because she picked up the cause of Tibet very early, after she lost her sister, she adopted a Tibetan orphan through an agency in 1971. She lost her sister in 70. In 1971, she adopted a Tibetan girl. She sponsored her and by sending money and later met her. I don't think there's a picture. No, you don't have the picture of her. It's in one of the books of her with her Tibetan daughter that she adopted. And when she was in the Bundestag, one of the things that she saw was immediately how you could use power and position and being in government to get things done. She'd seen it in the U.S. She'd been involved in major politics there. So one of the first things she did was bring the Dalai Lama. And, you know, it was, everybody's very sensitive about that. We don't want to offend the Chinese. We don't want to offend this group. We don't want to offend that group. But what Petra would cut through all of that, just like the U.S. Soviet thing, we don't want to offend the Russians, the far left would say, and the right would say, we ought to attack the Russians. And she would cut through all that, say, it doesn't matter. It's not left. It's not right. It's what's in front. It's what's ahead. It's what's the right thing to do. And anyone could look at the situation and see taking up the cause of the Tibetans, who had been totally overrun by the Chinese, was the right thing to do. Forget political sensitivity. She was just going to do it. And so she became very close with the Dalai Lama. She brought him to Vaclav Havel's inauguration in the Czech Republic. Those are the kinds of things that she would do. She would connect people like that. And the Dalai Lama is famous for having said about Petra when she talked about how she really, although she believed she had a combination of sort of, she left the Catholic Church, by the way, when it hit her that it was, she said it was a bunch of men in black coats who were determined to keep women under oppression. And until they got more enlightened about how they were doing things, she left the Catholic Church. And she had an amalgam of things that she believed in. But Buddhism was one of them that she sort of flirted with. But she apparently told the Dalai Lama that she felt bad. She really didn't have time to meditate. She had to keep going. Mm-hmm. And he kind of gave her his, you know, she went straight to the top. The Pope, Dalai Lama. Only religious heads of state. And apparently, he's quoted widely as having said to her, Petra, you just keep going. I'll meditate for you. And again, she published one of the first books about Tibet. It's called The Anguish of Tibet. Came out in, 1991. Right at the beginning of the decade when people were really paying attention to Tibet. And I'll pass this around. On the back is a picture of Petra and her partner Gert Bastian with the Dalai Lama and with a white scarf that is known as a kata, that's sort of an honorary scarf that when you meet a holy person in that tradition, you take a white silk scarf and you hand it to them and they bless it and then they hand it back to you and put it around you. And I've always loved that picture of her. For me, I had the amazing privilege of meeting Petra. I was very aware of her for years as an activist. You couldn't not be. If you were interested in environmental politics and green politics and peace politics and myself working on nuclear power and weapons for many years. At the time that I met her, I had become the director of the Greenpeace nuclear campaign here in the U.S., based in Washington, D.C., and I was working with former Congresswoman Bella Abzug on a project called the Women's Environment Development Organization, which was Bella's initiative. Bella, who was very close with Petra Kelly, they both were involved in global parliamentarians organizations. The U.S. Congress members were part of Parliamentarians for Global Action, Parliamentarians for World Peace. There's a number of formations involved in. And also, Bella was always out there supporting elected women. She believed in to her dying day that women should, unless and until women were 51% minimum of elected officials in the world, we hadn't got there yet. And I actually think it probably, you know,
71.
Yes. She was willing to start at least with a majority, but right now we're not even close. And in 1991, Bella, who was also an amazing visionary, took a look at the Earth Summit that was coming up in 1992 in Rio. Many of you remember the first Earth Summit, and said, where are the women? Here is this global environmental summit, and the environmental movement was picking up steam, and it was going to be a huge thing since Earth Day 1990. And she noticed that almost all the leaders of all the major environmental groups were men. And yet she knew that probably the vice chairman or the assistant director or the campaign leader, she knew it was full of women, and she was determined to find those women and bring them forward. And so she organized the World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet in Miami, which was a global meeting of women to look at the Agenda 21 and to write a whole new Agenda 21 for women. And I had the privilege of being on the International Policy Action Committee for that conference together with Petra Kelly. And there were about 35, 40 women from all over the world who came together to draft our agenda. There were 1,500 women from 83 countries at that meeting. And Petra did not come to our first organizing meeting in New York, but she did come to the conference and was a phenomenal presence everywhere she went, because if anyone embodied the global women's environmental movement, it was Petra. But also we had Vandana Shiva from India, Wangari Maathai from Kenya, Carrie and Mary Dan, the Western Shoshone activists from right here from Nevada. It was a phenomenal meeting. And I met Petra there, and at that point, obviously we shared a lot of common ground. We were the two nuclear people on the Policy Action Committee, seen as an area of expertise that we were to work from in the agenda. It was called the Women's Action Agenda 21. And if you look at that document, it's still visionary today. We took the Earth Summit agenda, Agenda 21, that had no references to women, and by the time we were done with it, it had 43 separate references to women and a whole chapter on women in the environment. However, it's interesting to note, one of the things that Petra always tried to do, and we tried to do with Bella, was to always connect militarism to environmentalism to women's rights. You never separated it out. And every single reference to the military that was in that document was struck by the Bush administration. So we knew we still had a lot to work to, except for one. Yes?
The remarkable thing at that conference, Jennifer and I were there, is we had a man out in the audience who really got to ranting and raving and talking and dominating. Quietly walked him out of the
room. Oh, you were there in Miami?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
so
it was just incredible to see.
That was a great meeting.
He couldn't do anything. I mean, they weren't being aggressive or anything, just kind of walked him out of the room.
And actually, I should also note, Winona LaDuke was also there. And Winona gave a fabulous talk.
And Wangari was incredible.
But Wangari was incredible. And actually, we come around full circle. Wangari Maathai was just named as the 2004 Petra Kelly Award recipient. One of the legacies of Petra is that the Heinrich Böll Stiftung in Germany has created this prize to honor her work and to carry her legacy. And it was just announced that Wangari, who is the founder of the Greenbelt Movement in Kenya, who also, like Petra, embodied it all. Wangari not only is one of the first, if not the first, woman PhD in Kenya. She was an environmentalist, but she looked at the economic aspects and created the Greenbelt Movement to help women address deforestation by gathering seeds, creating nurseries where women would grow trees, and then they would go and replant the trees, because deforestation was devastating the environment, but women needed fuel wood to cook their food. It also would increase their quality of life, because deforestation meant you had to walk further every day to get wood, and some women were walking up to 8 to 12 hours a day just to get wood. So it was this incredibly connected system that Wangari came up for. And then when the democratic movement started happening in Kenya, Wangari was there. She'd been arrested any number of times for fighting, what was at that time, the Moi government in Kenya. She was jailed, she was beaten. And she keeps coming. Americans, we do have our reputation. The following year, in the preparation for the summit in Rio, I was working with Bella in New York City, and we organized an International Women's Day rally during the final PrepCom, which is the preparatory committee for the Earth Summit. It happened to extend over International Women's Day, which is March 8th. So Bella got it beat in her mind that we had to do a big rally and that Petra had to come over from Germany for it. And we wanted her to come to the UN conference anyway, to the planning meetings. So this was the last appearance she was to make in the U.S. I spent a month or two communicating with her, as you'll see in her books. It was always amazing faxing back and forth with Petra, because she used thousands of exclamation points. And I don't know if Jody had this experience when working, but she always wrote on the diagonal across these pages. And it would be, "Dear Claire, dear sister, exclamation point, here's what we're going to do." And this was just even about, you know, airline reservations. And after meeting Petra, I started using a lot more exclamation points. There was an exuberance. I loved getting her faxes because they were lively. You could see there was a real person on the other side of it. And they came over for the rally. It was a remarkable rally. It was 1992 in March 8th. It was a Columbus Circle, if you know New York. There were people from all over the world were there. And the speakers were Petra Kelly, Maxine Waters, here from your area. It was Bella's crew, right? Natalie Merchant, the 10,000 Maniacs, came and read poetry, and Queen Latifah, Bella, also a visionary, you know, I remember her saying for weeks in the office, "We got to get Queen Latifah." She was really hot in New York at that time. And it was an amazing, and there was one man who she allowed to speak, Al Gore. He was not the nominee yet for vice president. I was very impressed with him. He came up on his own. He brought a woman policy analyst with him, and he gave the best speech to this day I've ever heard on climate change. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a tragedy that you know, so it's interesting. Not everyone. We have to develop new strategies to deal with this media age. But in any case, Petra gave an incredible speech. But the other thing to remember about her is, even though she didn't take very good care of herself, she took care of other people. They zoomed into town, and the first thing she did was give me, if you know Berlin at all, there's a called the Brandenburg Gate, which is very symbolic of when the Berlin Wall came down, the connection between East and West Berlin. And it's this great big gate that no longer is attached to the wall that you go through. And the first thing she did was she brought me handed me the Brandenburg Gate made out of chocolate. And said, "Now you can destroy the Berlin Wall in other ways. You can just eat it. You know, here's your own way to take it down." And it was just amazing, that kind of thoughtfulness to come all the way over and to even remember to bring a present when you're doing. And she was like that. She gave an impassioned speech, and I was really looking forward to working with her. We were corresponding back and forth. And ironically, I was here in Venice, California, the day that I heard that she died. I'd come down to meet with the Greenpeace Canvas in San Diego, and it was on the newspaper here in the Los Angeles Times. And when I went back to my office in Greenpeace in D.C., the next week after she had died, I received my final letter from her asking for support for this book. They were starting to put this book together, and it was just heartbreaking. You know, the letter had obviously been mailed before. It was a mass mailing that she'd sent out to all her friends to try and raise fundraising and support for the book. So I can't say I was someone who knew her really well or who had the privilege of knowing her over a long time. I thought I was going to be able to. It was something I was looking forward to. And that's why, even though I feel quite humbled by your request that I talk about her today, I guess this is one way I feel I can continue the friendship, is by speaking up for what she did, by trying to remember how she inspired us all, and challenging all of us to take care of ourselves. I wanted to show you a few other of her books, and then I want to close by one more reading from Petra's own words. This is a book that was written about her by Sarah Parkin, one of the founders of the British Greens, called The Life and Death of Petra Kelly, which she wrote following her passing. It's an incredibly well-researched book, and in terms of details of her political work and her impact in Europe and the U.S., Sarah did exhaustive interviews, and it's quite comprehensive, including a timeline of all the major accomplishments she did. One of her earlier books, Fighting for Hope. Again, hope is something we sometimes let go of. This one is also out of print, but you know you can find it in used bookstores. You can find it on eBay sometimes or Amazon. It's worth finding. This one you won't find here. I guess my final conversation with Petra was through a series of events. I was asked to speak at her memorial service in Bonn on behalf of women, peace, and environmental activists in the U.S. And this is all the speeches that were given at that memorial including mine in German, but I can't read it because I don't speak German. But it's a very, if you do speak German and you're interested in this, you could contact me and I could make you a copy, because it's all the tributes to her in German. And it was really a fascinating book. And there are many other books like this, Women Pioneers on the Environment, where Petra's featured. There's a chapter on her in here. If you Google her, you'll find out all kinds of things. And then, of course, if you get just one, this would be the one to get. It's her topical essays and speeches, Thinking Green, some wonderful articles about her by Charlene Spretnak, Eleanor Lacaine, who went with me to Petra's memorial service in Bonn, and Mark Hertzgard. I'm going to read to you the last speech that it's in here, If There's a Future, It Will Be Green, the one that I started with about Desert Storm. She talks about why she thinks the U.S. is a place that can really make a difference. And she had a way of summarizing the world's problems in a single paragraph. For example, nearly a billion people on Earth live in dire poverty. Overconsumption threatens our planet. Massive debts are crippling the ability of third world countries to provide even the most basic needs for their populations. Indigenous peoples and their environments are threatened. $2 million are spent each minute on the insane arms race, supposedly to keep the world safe. The consumer-oriented populations of the first world use grossly disproportionate amounts of the world's energy and resources and burn most of the fossil fuels, thus contributing dramatically to the greenhouse effect. There can be only one answer concerning where to start green politics at every electoral level in the United States, and it must happen right now. Because of the need for a low-energy future, because of the Earth's remaining rainforests are being destroyed, because 20 million Americans do not have enough to eat, because we must divert funds from military spending in order to solve terminal environmental, economic, and social problems, because human rights and civil liberties cannot be matters of political expediency, because we must replace consumption with conservation as society's driving force, because we can no longer ignore or neglect the years of warning signals telling us that we have come face to face with the natural limits of what we can take from the Earth, because the Earth has no emergency exit, because we can no longer sit by and watch Western governments be driven by endless expansion of consumption and by the futile goal of economic growth at any cost. For these and countless other desperate reasons, we must present green alternatives in the USA. The green political alternative in the United States must establish effective links between the everyday lives of people and the well-being of the planet. There is still a chance in the 1990s to consciously and democratically choose green congressional and extra-congressional paths, the two complementing one another. Over the years, I have met many helpful and competent green political groups and individuals in the United States who have inspired us in Europe to be more green. There are many exciting and creative green initiatives at the grassroots level here in the U.S., and there is a desperate need to expose the long-term societal failures of the Republicans and the Democrats. For many years, American leaders have shown little understanding of ecology, pacifism, or social justice, not to mention feminism. She never said one without the other. There's something to remember as green activists. She never said one without the other, to always cover the whole territory. I hope you will pour your hearts and souls into developing wise political alternatives. As the British Green stated, politicians up to now have fiddled with the planet and with our children's future and brought us to the brink of disaster. A clear and credible green political alternative in the United States is a road that can help many people. You can learn from our mistakes in Europe. The time for a U.S. national convention for a new green era is now. The time for biosphere politics and life-affirming politics is now. If we learn to change ourselves, we can begin the difficult work of sharing our insights and way of doing things with others so that together we can do the work that is needed to stop destroying ourselves and to heal our Mother Earth. So with that, I leave you with the words of Petra Kelly.